Welcome back to the International Taiwan Studies Centre podcast here at NTNU in Taiwan. Now, avid listeners to this podcast may remember that the very first episode we published was a conversation with Professor Ed Vickers from the University of Kyushu in Japan about the different ways in which the historical figure of Zhen Chenggong had been represented, or perhaps we could say co-opted, by the Japanese, by the Taiwanese, particularly in Tainan, and the Chinese, particularly in Fujian province, and how they all used different parts of this historical figure's achievements or character for their own ends, essentially. Now, when we spoke to Professor Ed Vickers last time, it was actually just before the 400th anniversary celebrations of the birth of Zhen Chenggong, which took place in Hirado in Japan. Now, I know that Ed went to attend these celebrations, and I wanted to catch up with him to find out how things had changed in terms of the dynamics, the way in which this historical figure was being remembered and celebrated. And so I am delighted to welcome back Professor Ed Vickers onto the podcast. And we'd like to continue this conversation and catch up on the latest developments in this story. Hi, Ed. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me. It's a real pleasure.
So do you think you could update us on what happened? You actually went to attend the 400th anniversary, because I think there's a bit of a surprise.
As I explained last time, I mean, I've been going for a number of years to the sort of annual, the Taisek or Zhen Chenggong festival in Hirado in mid-July, which is held around the time of Zhen Chenggong's birthday.
Right.
And as I explained, I mean, for however many years it is that I've been going there now, six, seven or so, it's really been the Taiwanese and the local Japanese, sort of local residents and a few local officials, who turn up and they make a few speeches, and then there's some singing and dancing. But the sort of tenor of the speeches and the sort of, you know, I suppose the politics of that event has been very much about celebrating the wonderful state of Taiwan-Japan relations in the past, present, and future.
Right.
Glossing over any unhappiness that might have occurred during the colonial era, in fact, pretty much denying that there ever was any. And so I didn't really know what to expect when they had this 400th anniversary event in Hirado last year. I suppose basically I was expecting a bigger version of what I'd seen in previous years, but that's not how it turned out at all. Now, I must confess that I need to do quite a bit more sort of digging into various aspects of Zhen Chenggong commemoration, including in Hirado, to find out more precisely exactly sort of when and why the delegation from China, and specifically from Fujian or Quanzhou, when they stopped coming. But as I said, they hadn't been coming for a few years, but then last year they turned up in huge numbers for this 400th anniversary celebration, which is held in a large auditorium in Hirado, whereas the previous year it had been held on a windy hilltop near the village. So yes, we transferred from the windy hilltop to a really quite massive auditorium.
Who was sponsoring the costs of that?
Well, I mean, of course, the auditorium would have been provided by Hirado City Council.
Okay.
I mean, it's a facility that belongs to Hirado City. I mean, city in Japan doesn't actually mean city in terms of lots of people and big tall buildings. It's an administrative unit, which in this case covers the whole of Hirado Island.
Sure.
So there's that big auditorium there that was made available for this. But then I would say about half of the people attending were from China, and most of those were wearing bright pink t-shirts. The pink t-shirt brigade were mostly from Nan'an,
okay,
which is seaside town south of Quanzhou city. So it's basically on the Fujian coastline between Quanzhou to the north and Xiamen to the south. It's actually on the coast just north. You could look out from there, and on a good day, you'll see Jinmen.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
So most of the people coming were from there, and they were coming from there because that's actually the ancestral home of the Zhong clan.
Right.
But with the zone being swamped by this large Chinese delegation, the Taiwanese last year really sort of made themselves rather scarce. So there was a deputy mayor of Tainan who turned up and sat on the stage alongside two Chinese officials, one from Quanzhou and maybe one from Xiamen. I think they were both sort of the local party secretaries. And then next to them, you have the deputy mayor of Tainan and the three of them trying hard not to make eye contact. It's all a little bit awkward. And whereas in previous years, the Taiwan consul general would come down from Fukuoka to the Zhenchengong Festival in Hirado, and he would make a speech. So someone from Tainan would make a speech, the consul would make a speech. And as I said, it would be all about how wonderful relations between Taiwan and Japan were and how we are forever friends. But there was no diplomatic participation in last year's event at all. So no Taiwan consul general and no Chinese consul general either.
Wow. Was that, do you think, an agreement that they came to together?
Yes, I think it was. Of course, I'm not privy to the details of what negotiations took place, but I did meet the Taiwan consul general. So he was there, but he didn't say anything. And he crept in after the event had started and sort of tiptoed over to an inconspicuous seat towards the rear of where everyone else was sitting. And then as that sort of event in the hall was finishing and people were dispersing, I sort of ran after him and tapped him on the shoulder and said, you know, how are you? Is everything okay? And I must say he looked rather stressed, and he said, well, you know, it's been a difficult process, basically.
Right.
The arrangements for this year's event. And then he dashed off. So he didn't stay for the rest of it. He didn't stay for any of the ceremonies at the actual Zhenchengong shrine that they have.
Wow.
That was all very awkward. And that sort of illustrates the dramatic sort of shift in the whole climate surrounding this event from one year to the next.
So do you think the Taiwanese were rather taken by surprise than having kind of had it to themselves for a number of consecutive years?
Well, that's a good question. The answer is I don't know, but it's quite possible that they were. But quite clearly, on the other side, you know, the Chinese or the Fujian delegation were determined to stamp their mark on Zhenchengong commemoration in this sort of significant 400th anniversary year. Probably what I'm going to have to do is arrange to talk to someone official in the Hirado city government.
Sure.
And try and get their line on the background to all of this.
Yeah.
Because that would be very interesting.
Absolutely. Well, last time we talked about how, you know, history and historical figures get used by different sides in order to push a particular message or standpoint. Now, I know that you have also, since we last talked, you've traveled to Quanzhou and to Xiamen and also Nan'an, the kind of the homeland of the Zheng clan. Did that visit shed any light on why the Chinese delegation was so keen to, as you say, stamp their mark on this 400th anniversary?
Well, before I get to that, and I it's slightly related, I should make the point that at that 400th anniversary celebration in Hirado last year, it wasn't just the delegation from Fujian.
Okay.
I mean, they were the majority of the sort of Chinese or non-Taiwanese overseas guests. I mean, because of course there is a sort of international network of Zhenchengong temples. You know, probably his main significance for Chinese communities is as a sort of deity.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, particularly in communities of Fujianese descent, which of course means not just Fujian itself, but also Taiwan, but also Southeast Asia. So there were people there representing various Zheng-related associations from Hong Kong, from Macau, from Malaysia. I can't remember whether there's anyone from Singapore.
Okay.
But, you know, you know, this sort of international network was also represented.
Yeah.
And there, the question also inevitably arises, perhaps especially these days under Xi Jinping, you know, to what extent has that overseas Chinese sort of coming together with Chinese been to some extent orchestrated by United Front type operations? I don't know, but there is a lot of this United Front type activity going on.
That's fascinating, because there may be a degree of speculation, but nonetheless, we're going from last time, we're very much talking about the Taiwanese, the Japanese, the Chinese, and Zheng Chengong's relationship and the way he's being used as a historical figure. And now it seems actually that's even broadening out, as you say, into Southeast Asia, to Malaysia, to these other communities.
Well, this is speculation, but we, you know, we can imagine that of course there's a bottom up sort of interest and enthusiasm for Zheng Chengong amongst, you know, people who frequent his shrines wherever they are, in Fujian, in Taiwan, or in Southeast Asia. There's the grassroots interest in Zheng Chengong. But then, you know, increasingly in recent years, there's been the Communist Party's interest in tapping into these networks.
Sure. Yeah.
Ma Zhu, for example, has been an increasing focus of sort of tourism, commemorative activities, attempts to sort of forge bonds between particularly Fujian and Taiwan and overseas Chinese groups. And so I think, you know, to some extent, probably what we're seeing with Zheng Chengong is something along the same lines as what we see with Ma Zhu. It's a sort of attempt to deploy religion for United Front purposes, as well as a sort of interest in Zheng Chengong as a historical figure and what he symbolizes.
Yeah, fascinating. So then coming on to your trip then, as I say, did that shed some light on, I guess you've touched a little bit on it now, but on, you know, why they were so keen to retake this ground of being, you know, a significant place of Zheng Chengong?
Well, yes and no. And I mean, one question that occurred to me as I was traveling through Fujian and visiting these Zheng Chengong related sites was, given that he's a national hero, Minzu Yingxiong, you might expect the nation to take quite a bit of interest in his 400th birthday. So maybe a Zheng Chengong related television series on CCTV, or a, you know, a blockbuster film, or at least a speech by a major party leader, sort of drawing the people's attention to the importance of his legacy. But there doesn't really seem to have been any of that at national level. But at provincial level in Fujian, yes, I mean, there has been considerable effort put into commemorating him in that 400th anniversary year. So there's a special exhibition at the Xiamen Museum, the Xiamen City Museum, that is. There's this massive museum in Quanzhou called the Min Taiyuan Bouguan. I can't remember what the English translation is, but basically it's the Museum of Fujian Taiwanese Kinship.
Right. Okay.
So there's plenty about Ma Zhu in there. And that had recently actually been revamped, I think only within the last year or so.
Mm.
And so they had a big swanky new exhibition about Zheng Chengong there, lots of fancy audiovisual effects. And actually in that same museum, the Min Taiyuan Bouguan, the Museum of Taiwanese Fujianese Kinship, they did have a special exhibition on Zheng Chengong. But how special? I mean, that special exhibition basically consisted of row upon row of statues of Zheng Chengong, all looking, to me at least, pretty much the same. I mean, I'm not really a statue connoisseur, so I'm sure I was missing something. But, you know, just lots of statues of Zheng Chengong. And yeah, he was a hero. We love him. Happy 400th birthday. And that was pretty much it. And I got the sense there, and sort of generally while I was in Fujian, that there's also almost a kind of purposeful vagueness about some of the specifics of Zheng Chengong.
A strategic ambiguity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, and one thing that, as I think I mentioned before, that they're extremely ambiguous about, well, basically in denial about, is the fact that his mother was Japanese, which is, of course, related to the fact that he was born in Japan. And you can't really get away from that when you're celebrating his birthday. And so I think that is one significant source of this sort of ambiguity or ambivalence. The fact that he was born in Japan does get mentioned in some of these exhibitions in Fujian, because they're big exhibitions. And, you know, if you're telling the entire story of his life, it's kind of hard to get away from actually saying where he was born and who his mother was. But it's kept to a minimum.
Do you think maybe that part of that could be a reason why there was less of the national exposure of celebrating this Chinese hero who actually was born in Japan and had a Japanese mother? Or,
well, yeah, I think that's part of the reason, because, you know, if you're going to make a big thing of it nationally, then it's hard not to get into the details of where he was born and who his parents were.
Yeah.
Although, of course, in a Confucian society, who your mother is doesn't really matter very much anyway, does it? I mean, that's part of what's going on here as well. But yeah, that partly accounts for it, I think. But I was interested to notice that at several of these special exhibitions, and also, in fact, at Nan'an, with the sort of Zheng clan base, ground zero for the Zhengs, there were quotations from Xi Jinping. Because, of course, in China in the 2020s, no exhibition can be considered complete without a quotation from the chairman. But as they cast about for the obligatory Xi Jinping quotation, in every case, the quotation they were using was a quotation from 1997. So they had to go back to 1997 to find a quotation from Xi Jinping about Zheng Chengong. And the reason it was 1997 is that back then he was, I think, party secretary in Fujian. Anyway, he had position, his role was in the party hierarchy in Fujian province. So back then, he did make a speech about Zheng Chengong, and I'm ashamed to say, but that, you know, or excerpts from that quotation were duly, well, etched into a rock in Nan'an. That had clearly been done as part of the 400th anniversary celebrations, and also sort of emblazoned on the wall at the exhibition at Xiamen Museum. But it's interesting that Xi Jinping clearly thought it worthwhile to say something about Zheng Chengong and what a wonderful hero he was back in 1997, but apparently couldn't stir himself to say anything further or to sort of refresh his thoughts on Zheng Chengong to mark the 400th anniversary of his birth.
Yeah, interesting. Do you think that's partly just local level not wanting to trouble the chairman?
Well, that'd be very thoughtful of them. but you know, as we all know, the tensions between China and Taiwan and the sort of military saber rattling has sort of ratcheted up in recent years. And so on the one hand, the Chinese government clearly wants to up the threat level against Taiwan. You know, they want the people in Taiwan to feel scared, to feel nervous, and therefore to sort of watch what they say and do. But on the other hand, the Chinese government, I think they're careful about fueling expectation amongst Chinese people about actions, possibly risky actions that they might or might not take on the international stage to achieve their declared aims. And talking openly about invading Taiwan, you get the sense, is something that, you know, they really don't want to do. Because the more they talk about it, the more pressure might build amongst the Chinese populace for them to actually do it. Mm. And when it comes to Zheng Chengong, that's basically what he's all about.
Sure.
From a Chinese perspective, you know, invading Taiwan is his shtick.
Yeah.
So, you know, the more you talk about him, the more you invite questions. Okay, he did it. Yeah, that's what a hero does. What are you going to do? Yeah, when are we going to invade Taiwan again? Come on, come on. So I wonder whether that's also part of what's behind what, you know, really seems to be a kind of soft peddling of commemoration of this guy who they nonetheless acknowledge as a national hero.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, this is kind of speculation.
Yeah, fascinating. And at the same time, on this big 400th anniversary year of last year of 2024, then very much seeing him played down or almost forgotten in Taiwan and in Tainan, where he kind of landed as well.
Mm. That, at least to me, seems much more readily understandable, given that invading Taiwan is not something that the Taiwanese want to particularly celebrate. Invading Taiwan from Fujian. But also, as we discussed before, I mean, the changes that have happened within Taiwan in recent years in terms of how Taiwan's history overall is discussed, and particularly how the history of the 17th century is viewed and its implications for indigenous Taiwanese, and the increasingly open acknowledgement of Chinese settlement as a form of colonization.
Yeah.
So all of that, from the Taiwanese point of view, has meant that Zheng Chengong has increasingly come to be viewed less as a kind of national hero and more as a sort of questionable colonial pioneer.
Another layer of colonialism, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, Ed, I guess my final question from this conversation then is, from what you saw in Hirado last year, again, a bit of speculation, but do you think going forward, that you can see the Chinese, particularly the Fujian delegations, continuing to dominate the celebrations in Japan? Or do you think that will gradually shift back to being a kind of Tainan and Hirado connection?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And again, you're inviting me to speculate, really. I mean, I don't think that we're going to see massive delegations from Fujian come over every year. I mean, okay, the yen is quite low. Coming to Japan these days is cheaper than it ever has been. But even so, I mean, I don't think all of those people are going to make the trip every year. It may be that Quanzhou sends one or two people, Tainan sends one or two people, as, you know, used to happen.
Yeah.
And they sort of turn up to the regular, smaller scale commemorations that have been going on here for many years now. In terms of what the locals here, as well as the Taiwanese, would like to happen, I suspect they'd all be much more comfortable with just a sort of Japan-Taiwan loving. You know, I suspect that deep down, the Quanzhou Brigade are slightly viewed as party crashers. But that's basically because of the objections and the diplomatic complications that are involved whenever you have a Chinese delegation and a Taiwanese delegation attending anything. Side by side. I mean, all of that has become a lot more difficult under Xi Jinping. They used to fudge it up until the Xi era, but they've been much more hardline on that. And even more so since 2016, of course, since when the DPP has been in power in Taiwan.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going to happen. The other thing that's going on here, from the Hirado or Japanese perspective, which I probably already mentioned last time, is tourism. I mean, that's really primarily, I think, what it's all about from the Hirado perspective. And I'm sure on one level, they would like to encourage tourism from China as well as from Taiwan, so long as the Chinese and Taiwanese tourists don't end up fighting each other on the beach. You know, Hirado is the kind of place, you know, like many places in rather remote corners of Japan, that is struggling economically and is becoming very depopulated. But it's a beautiful place for them. The Zheng Chengong Festival or the Teisei-Kor Festival is a massive opportunity to put themselves on the map and to promote themselves with potential tourism markets in Taiwan and in China.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think they're sort of in two minds about this, probably. On the one hand, Taiwanese are more congenial from the Japanese point of view. They don't talk about the war and they say how much they, you know, how nostalgic they are for Japanese colonialism, which just warms the cockles of all Japanese nationalist hearts. You're not going to get that from the Chinese, but what you might get from the Chinese is dollars or yen. You know, which are also very very welcome. So
yeah, so alongside all the politics of it, you've got just the raw economics and the economic pressures built in as well.
Yeah, very much so.
Wow, fascinating. Thanks so much, Ed, for continuing this conversation and updating us on what you've seen and what you've experienced and what's going on.
Well, thanks very much. It gives me the opportunity also to think through some of my speculations, which I must now go away and sort of try and confirm or disprove.
Then you can come back on again once you've got further proofs or disproofs.
Well, yeah, and although we might at some point reach Zhenchengong saturation. Yeah.
We'll see. Great. Well, thank you very much. Yeah, have a great evening, and I'll look forward. In fact, I'll look forward to seeing you in Taiwan before too long.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Josh.
Brilliant. So that was Professor Ed Vickers from the University of Kyushu in Japan, filling us in on the latest developments in the ongoing Zhenchengong story. I've been your host, Josh. Thanks for listening. And please don't forget that if you want to stay up to date with what's going on, not just here in Taiwan, but in the world of Taiwan studies globally, then do sign up for our International Taiwan Studies Center newsletter, which you can do so from the show notes. Thanks for listening. Until next time, goodbye.